You get in these groups that people come in and provide value. You want to be around people that can lift you up. And then you can leverage those networks to move into bigger networks. Doesn't mean you leave your old friends behind. It just means like maybe I'll start networking with some of those guys.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. We've got a little bit of a different guest on today. We've got Ken Eslick. He is a Tony Robbins coach. He's in the recruiting business, which I know really well with my recruiting background. But we dig deep into the mindset shift that sometimes needs to happen when you're thinking about going down a different path, whether it's starting a business, investing in another asset class outside of your company 401k or the stock market, and you want to diverge from the normal, if you will. So we dig into coaching and masterminds and just the mindset shift that happens when you start to go down a little bit of a different path. It's super interesting. I think you'll get a lot out of it. So let's get Ken on the pod. All right, Ken, man. Hey, good to have you on the podcast. Happy to have you here.
Yeah, nice to be here, sir. It's been at least a couple of years since I've seen you.
Yeah, we've crossed paths before for sure. And we'll jump into that. But let's first have you introduce yourself to the podcast and what you've been up to in your career. And then we'll jump into some stuff.
Sure. Well, my name is Ken Eslick. I am the founder and owner, co-founder, I guess, with my wife of a company called The Leaders Lab. We're a leadership talent acquisition company. We also have a podcast by the same name. My background's been really 100% in leadership, even going back to being a kid. Went in the military after high school, had entrepreneurial instincts along with a lack of education, which is a good combination to say, I guess you better be working for yourself because no one's going to pay you. So started a first aid and safety supply company back in my 20s, sold that to a Fortune 500 company, went to work for them for about 14 years, and then the last decade or so, I've focused mainly on talent acquisition, coaching, development. I'm a trainer for Tony Robbins. You and I met when I was a chief operating officer for a mastermind called M1. I'm a seven-figure coach for another mastermind out in the UK. So I get pretty involved in personal development, training, coaching, that kind of thing, both as a personal investment, but also as a way to contribute and give back. It's definitely a big part of what I do.
Yeah, no, and our paths are similar in the sense that we both are in the recruiting business and have been for a bit. So I'm curious, and just to dive into that a little bit, how long have you been doing the recruiting side? And obviously, we connected during COVID, I think it was. So catch me up on what's been going on. I think you changed the business name. So talk about that a little bit.
Well, I've been doing recruiting for about 11 years, but when I got into it, it honestly just a bit of a job. I mean, I think there's businesses that you can start and they just become jobs, and meaning very low growth, not super exciting, but it pays the bills, right? And I think when I left corporate America, I mentally wanted a bit of a break and I was like, okay, I'm going to get into recruiting. But there's no such thing as really a flat business, in my opinion. I mean, maybe for a period of months it could be, but over time, it grates on you. I don't think we're designed to not grow. I mean, I think we're designed as human beings to grow and to contribute. And so what ends up happening is those things that started as, let me take it easy, end up being the thing that sucks the life out of you because there's no passion behind it. When COVID hit, and I hate to be too cliche here, but a lot of people called it the Great Reset or whatever. I mean, it truly was that way for me because it was like, well, recruiting dried up.
Yeah.
It's funny when people say, well, my business got hurt. I'm like, our business stopped, man. Like it just, I don't know if the positions you recruited for did, but we went from having like 50 open jobs to literally zero overnight.
Yeah. I literally started that. Well, I've been in corporate recruiting up until that point, up until January, 2020. And I quit a very cushy six-figure job to start my own recruiting business in January of 2020. So I went from having like a handful of recs and feeling really good. And then COVID really slammed the door on a lot of things. And talk about the Great Reset. Even though I literally had just started the business, it was an opportunity for me to focus on things that I wanted to do, the clients that I wanted to work with, but also to get into real estate. And that's why this podcast started recently. And I've gotten into real estate stuff. But going back to the recruiting, yeah, it was definitely an oh crap moment where I started a business, and luckily recruiting is a low barrier to entry business, meaning there's not a lot of upfront capital. You just need a laptop and an LLC and you're good to go. So luckily I didn't have a lot of capital outlay to figure out. But yeah, it's been a good ride so far, but it is one of those things where it does ebb and flow, right? There's times where there's abundance. We're recording this in early June of 2023, and we're still in this high interest rate, recessionary fear environment. Some of my clients are hiring like gangbusters. Others have definitely slowed down. I've gotten more into leadership recruiting, but a lot of the stuff is more middle management and individual contributor stuff in the tech and marketing spaces. So I'm curious to hear what's been going on.
Yeah, what I think happened with us, Justin, was in that great reset, when this comes back, because we knew it was going to come back. And so when it comes back, I'm not doing this anymore, meaning I'm not going to go into something that's just a job. Like, that's not fun. So if we're going to do this, we're going to do this right. And so what does that mean? And it meant bringing my wife into the business for the first time, really. I mean, she had done some light work, but really bringing her in as a partner.
Yeah.
And she's been super instrumental. And then we just looked at it and went, okay, we took a story brand course through Donald Miller. We got clear on our message. Who are we really? Cut off the 20% of the stuff that's taking 80% of your time and really focus. And that was so helpful. And we changed the name and we rebranded. We came out the Leaders Lab and the timing was great. The economy started coming back. I think now what we're seeing is, it's funny. I mean, if you talk to someone in tech and you try to tell them there's maybe not a recession going on, they're going to want to cut your throat, right?
Yep.
But if you're in hospitality, you could be like, is the economy in trouble? So everything is by industry and cyclical in the sense that what came up must come down. So housing went up, it must come down, right? The stuff that was in the middle the whole time that actually just had pent up demand, like business services, hospitality, things like that, aren't seeing a pinch. So for people in any line of work, not just recruiting, I think our ability to be versatile and do what we do, but not just stay put in one industry and wait for the storm to be over. I mean, I think that's dangerous.
Yeah. And if you look at like the labor segments, tech is a small fraction of the overall job market, right? So if you hear about Meta laying off 10,000 people, that sounds like a lot. And it is for maybe one company. But if you look at, like, to your point, hospitality, our pool company can't keep pool techs employed, right? Because it's just... So there are industries that are super busy and there are industries that are definitely slower for sure. And so,
and if you look at, not to talk over, but like, let's take a company like Facebook. My son actually works there as a contractor. So he's being impacted by this, right? Or is afraid of being impacted by this.
Right.
But the headline will read, let's take somebody that's got 300,000 employees. It's going to lay off 10,000, right? The headline reads, Google, Facebook, whoever it is, laying off 10,000, because that's the attention grabber. The reality is 10,000 of 300,000 is a drop in the bucket, right? I mean, it's one in every 30. It's just a little over 3%. So like another headline could be, despite economic downturn, Google retains 96.5% of its bloated workforce because they wouldn't stop giving out job offers during COVID. So the fact that they only have to reduce by 5%, 10%, it's surprising. I mean, they were just throwing money at people to come to work. They had people coming to work doing nothing.
Yeah.
Sitting on the sidelines just so their competitors couldn't take them. So, so pretty crazy stuff. But what we're seeing now is, I mean, listen, the economy is like people. It's emotional and it whiplashes.
Yeah.
And we go way too conservative and then we hypercorrect and then we go way overboard. And I think we're just seeing a post-COVID whipsaw that will hopefully level itself out without too much damage. And that I feel like we're seeing signs that that might be the case with interest starting to get under control. And
I think once the Fed, it sounds like they're slowing the roll on the interest rate hikes. And I think that will stem some fear and all that fun stuff. So I think you're right. I think we hopefully have seen a little bit of the worst, but who knows? There could be another change coming down the pike that we're just not aware of. So I want to dig into the coaching and the mastermind stuff right after the break, but we're going to take a quick sponsor break. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting at HireTomorrow.com to see how they can help.
All right, we are back with Ken Islick on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. So before the break, we were talking about the recruiting world, and that's something that we both are very kind of noteworthy and passionate about. Another side of your life and everything has been coaching, mentor programs, masterminds, and the audience that listen to this podcast typically are real estate investors, whether they're just getting started in their real estate investing journey or they're passive investors. And there is a mindset shift. I went through it in 2018 when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I realized that I didn't have to work for 65 years or whatever, or until I was 65 and hope I had enough in retirement. There are other options out there outside of just the stock market and a company 401k to invest in. But you have to have a bit of a mindset shift and go out what feels like on your own, because the vast majority of the population and your coworkers and maybe your parents went down that straight and narrow of get a good job, work for a good company, buy a house, and then wait until retirement. So I'm curious to talk a little bit deeper about the coaching and the mindset stuff that you work on with Tony Robbins. I'm very curious to hear about that. So yeah, let's just pick that apart a little bit, what your advice is on people that are getting into this real estate space, or maybe they're thinking about a career change or something that you have to get away from the norm.
You covered a lot. No, you really did, in a good way. One thing that I've learned, first of all this work that I've done or that I do in that space, it's not because I woke up one day and went, I want to be a coach. I woke up one day and found that even though I had had a lot of on paper success, I did not feel successful. I did not feel fulfilled, or I would chase things like money only to see myself lose it over stupid investments or stock market plays that didn't work out or getting too aggressive or whatever it was. Or when you have it, it never feels quite as good as the downside of like losing it.
Right.
Which is all like money personality type stuff. And so maybe we'll spend some time there. But
yeah,
I can tell you all this stuff that I've done with Tony and with Rock Thomas and anybody else that I've worked with. It's been through my own self-discovery, right? It hasn't been like, ooh, I'm a genius, let me come help you. It's really been, God damn it, why can't I figure this stuff out? I got to grind out myself. And then once you figure it out or part of it out or get on the right path, then you want to share it. Then you go like, wait a minute, you don't have to wait till you're in your 40s or whatever to discover this. You know, the same way that you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad at a time in your life that it was pretty pivotal. You didn't have to wait another 20 years to read that to figure out what your money type was or whatever. So let's talk about money mindset for a minute.
Yeah.
I think, that's where I was stuck the most. And I think that's what everybody, especially in your audience, because what everyone's talking about doing is leveling up. They're talking about changing where they are and trying to find a new normal, just like you did, right? And that takes a deliberate mindset shift. And here's what I mean by that is we all run on a thermostat the same way our house does. We have a heater that kicks on when it gets too cold. And in the analogy that I'm giving, that would be like money in the bank's getting low. I better get my ass to work. Or we better be conservative and cut expenses if I don't have another way of bringing money in.
Yeah.
But we also shut it down when it gets too hot. I mean, you know, that you see people do it all the time. How many times have we heard about lottery winners losing the money that they won within months or even a few short years after winning millions? I mean, they could be making like 40 grand a year and then they lose millions in like 3 years. You're like, how did you do that? And they did it because they will literally light their money on fire. I mean, not literally, yes, but they will just
blow it on stupid things and not even thinking about it. And then they wake up and like, oh crap, I don't have any
left. It's all gone. And the reason it's all gone is because their brain never felt like they deserved it in the first place. They never changed the thermostat. So the brain was like, whatever I got to do to get rid of this, to get us back into the comfort zone, let's get back in the comfort zone. And I don't know if anyone listening can relate, but have you ever felt out of the comfort zone because something was going so well?
Yeah. Like, it's the fear of success because you're like, wait, do I deserve this or am I prepared for the next level? And I'll share just a small example, but like when I first got into my own recruiting business, like obviously I got hit with COVID, which yes, it was scary. Luckily I had Allison, my wife, which was a partner in everything and she had a steady W-2, but then I started making good money, a lot more money than I ever expected. And it was like, I had to check myself like, wait, is this right? It feels weird to have this excess that I can then go invest in real estate. And that was the purpose, was to obviously take the money that I'm making in recruiting, put it in another vehicle that's going to hopefully bring me back some passive income so that I don't have to work for the rest of my life unless I want to. But it was like a little bit of like imposter syndrome. I used to always say like, I grew up very humbly and maybe I shouldn't deserve to be making the money that I'm making, but you need to get out of that comfort zone, right? And maybe talk more about that self-sabotage that some people go through to get back to that comfort zone, kind of that normal.
I think the first part of it sounds a little cliche, but is the recognition that like, gosh, I'm acting a certain way. Like I have these triggers around money. And I think if you know that you have them, then there's a number of resources you can choose to look at. But our beliefs are etched into our minds like grooves in a record player. They play over and over and over again, and they have for years and years and years. So when you say things like my humble upbringings or the way that my parents, that's a story. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that that's the narrative that you've been telling yourself for a very long time. And so the longer we tell ourselves that, the more entrenched those grooves get, right? Yeah. And at a certain point, if we turn the lights on, if, and people listening to this are turning the lights on, you've turned the lights on. But if you turn the lights on, it doesn't mean just by turning them off, it goes away. It just means like, oh, a lot of the stuff I do is on autopilot. A lot of the way that I feel and behave and everything else is due to things that happened before that I created a story around. So I guess we're going to try to talk about a lot of stuff in a really short period of time, but it's just unpacking it. It's starting to question the story. Like one of my stories was we didn't come from money. Everybody, when I started earning money, everybody in my family was like, oh my God, like, whoa, you better hold on to that.
Right.
Nobody in our family makes that kind of money. Almost like the people giving me the money were wasting the money, right?
Got it.
And so I'd start to believe it kind of, right? I'd start going, yeah. Or if anything bad happened, like if I lost 5% in the stock market, I'd be like, see, dummy, like you weren't destined for it. So then I figured out that I could make money. I knew that I could make money. So then I changed the story to still accommodate the old one, which is, well, you can make it, but you can't hold on to it. And so I would invest like an asshole. Like I would make 80% a year on the stock market, but leave it all out there to ride and sometimes put some of it on margin. You know what I mean? Like you're just eventually going to lose, but your brain will sabotage you unless you start to acknowledge it and dance with it and figure out what it's trying to do. And then you can change the story. You really, really can. It takes some work, but you can change it. And I think when you're young, you can change it pretty quickly. I think when you're older, you've got deeper grooves and you got to do a little more work.
Yeah. Once you get to a certain age, obviously you're more ingrained, but you also have other responsibilities, right? So you've got these other people or things that you have at family, career status, whatever it is. And if you start to deviate away from that, it's harder to change your story, right? It's harder to say, hey, family, I'm going to take a risk and start a business, or I'm going to take a risk and instead of investing in what seems to be the best thing in the company 401k or the stock market, I'm going to put it in real estate. I'm going to put it in crypto or whatever you want to put it in. And so you've got to acknowledge that like, okay, you're making this deliberate shift and you've got to be comfortable with that movement.
What's really interesting in what you guys do is if you have a spouse or a significant other, you're also dealing with their money baggage or money types or money stories or whatever. Yeah. So you might come to terms with your own thing, right? You might go, okay, I'm going to leave all the baggage and I don't deserve to be poor and I'm cool with the next level and all of that. And then you go home and go, honey, guess what? I'm dumping $100,000 into so many door building and all of a sudden they tense up.
Yep.
And now there's a whole nother thing to unravel. And if you're in a marriage, that really is a partnership when it comes to investing. And so if you're not dealing with it now, you'll be dealing with either each other's money mindset or you'll be dealing with living by yourself probably at some point.
Yeah. So when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, it was a light bulb, right? I was walking to work one day to my W-2 and I finished reading the book and I was like, holy crap, I need to be doing things differently. I need to be investing my money differently, my time differently, because I was a saver and I always saved money and that was just my story, right? Part of my story. And I was nervous to share the book with Allison, my wife, because I was like, to your point, I wasn't sure how great it would feel if she was like, I don't want to do that. Like, let's just stick with the W-2 life and let's just both work and get the white picket fence and all that fun stuff. luckily, she read the book and had the same reaction of like, what the heck are we doing? Like, we need really to cool. be going and putting money into real estate. And that's when we started. We bought our first duplex like 6 months later. And then we got into the syndication world and we made a plan to have me be the risk in the relationship. Meaning I started a business. I went out on my own instead of just working the W-2. She felt very comfortable being the benefits, if you will. So she has a W-2 job. She has the benefits. She makes great money and has got a great career. And she loves that. I like the ability to do the things like this, like podcasts or invest and travel to real estate events and things like that. So luckily, once we read the book, we were literally both on the same path. It's going at the same speed and we have different roles in our journey. But yeah, I could see it being a uncomfortable situation if the spouse or significant other or even your extended family are not interested in the quote unquote risk of leaving a W-2 job, which I think you and I maybe would both agree. We've seen many good employees get laid off for no apparent reason. So a W-2 job isn't necessarily the safest thing in the world. Sometimes being your own boss is a little bit safer because you can somewhat control your own destiny.
Well, I applaud what you and Allison did. And it's cool that you're on the same page, but even if you weren't, at least you find out early on and you can right. try to get there somehow, right? But there's a lot of couples who just don't do that. They just don't communicate. One starts to go out and do things without consulting the other one. And money is the number one yeah. divider of a relationship. So,
yeah. So I'm curious, we talked a little about money mindset, but if somebody is in a situation, they listen to the podcast, they're a hardworking W-2 employee, they've already started to get the bug about alternative investments outside of the stock market. You've seen a bunch of different masterminds and things like that. Like, how does somebody get into that? Because if you Google mastermind, there's a million and one options out there, right? And so how do you sift through the stuff to find one that may be right for you? Or is it really a trial by error or ask for referrals? Like, how do you do that?
Well, I think you do got to ask around and do your homework a little bit because everybody's so different and there are yeah. so many out there. And there's some that are not that great. There's some that are really great. But I think a lot of people think when they're thinking about mastermind, oh my God, like they hear that thing. And again, their money fear kicks in and they're like, I can't afford that. Like, I'm not there yet. You hear of things like the Genius Network and stuff like that, that are tens of thousands of dollars a year. Tony Robbins Platinum Partnership, 85 grand a year per person plus travel. But a mastermind is more than just your mind. It could be you and like a friend, right? That's a mastermind. Yeah. You and a group of guys, you and you, yeah. know, you probably had a pod when you were at M1 of like-minded people that you guys can share stories and ideas and challenge each other on the week's goals and things like that. So there's a number of ways to do a mastermind and you don't necessarily have to pay for it. What I do encourage people to do is how can you get around people that are doing, I don't say a little bit better, always better than you, but at least better than you in certain areas of life, right? And maybe you bring something to the table too. Like maybe you're awesome at health, right? Like a master of physical fitness or whatever. Cool. You can help everybody with that. That's a big area of life. And maybe you come to the table and you're the real estate guy. And maybe I come to the table and I'm the mindset guy or whatever. But like you get in these groups that people come in and provide value and you want to be around people that can lift you up. And then you can leverage those networks to move into bigger networks. Doesn't mean you leave your old friends behind. It just means like, hey, this was cool when I was buying one or two houses a year. Now I'm getting into hundreds of doors, apartment buildings. Maybe I'll start networking with some of those guys.
Yeah, it was interesting when Alice and I got into, started peeling back the onion in real estate. And it was like a big passion of ours. We started talking about it a lot, obviously, together. And a lot of our friends were in that same W-2, having kids at the age that we were like in our young 30s. And we were like, wait, we need to find like-minded people because we were talking about real estate and it was just falling on deaf ears, if you will. Right. And so we were like, okay, so we needed to find like-minded people. We did that. I joined M1. That was a great experience. I still talk to a number of the people that I met there still to this day. I think one of the things that helped me is getting over that investment of not only my time, but it is a money investment, right? And so people think about masterminds or courses or something that costs money, thinking about it more as an investment, like an education, like a degree, like everybody goes and gets a bachelor's degree, theoretically, right? And that's money that you've paid through loans or however you paid for it. But that's how I thought of real estate, because I started to go down the multifamily route the cheap way. I bought a few analyzers and watched YouTube videos. But then I realized I can't buy a 100-unit apartment complex by myself. One, I don't have the capital, the track record, the experience, et cetera. And so you need to find a tribe of people that are, to your point, farther in that path than you are, that you can then miss some of the potholes that they stumbled on and hopefully accelerate your progression faster. And so that was just, once I shifted that piece a little bit too of, yes, I'm investing thousands of dollars to be in this group, but the return on that investment is speed, right? I can get to my goals faster, but it accelerates that process. So I had to shift away from being like, holy cow, this is 20, 30 grand to join this group, but is that investment worth it? And at the end of the day, it is most of the time. So it is all about mindset, right? It's just shifting away from looking at this is a $1,000 expense, more of like, this is part of my investment journey if I really want to get to my goals, whatever those goals
are. You hit the nail on the head, which is it's all about the ROI, or it should be. Now, the ROI doesn't necessarily have to be dollars too, right?
Right.
It might be if someone's had to lose 100 pounds their whole life and they can't do it. That's a big thing too. But a lot of times in what we're talking about, it's going to be measured by money. So it's like, okay, I'm spending 10 grand to be part of this, or 15 grand. And again, some of these are much cheaper than that. You can do group programs that are online that meet once a week, whatever. But whatever one you're doing, is the investment of time and money going to pay off at the end of the day? Are you going to be happier? Are you going to be further along? Like I said, a coach in a big recruiting group that's based out of the UK. I'm the only coach that they have. We have, I think, around 300 people in that group, maybe 350. I think they spent somewhere around $10,000 each. I'm not really on the billing side of it. And then they have other programs they can get into from there. And I can tell you, because I went through it, I'm like, you apply yourself, it pays off in the first month. M1, you apply yourself, it paid off in the first couple of months, right? Like anything that's been good, it's going to pay for itself. You start, someone might go, well, Tony Robbins Platinum, 85 grand, that's going to pay for itself in the first month. I'm like, I don't know if it'll pay for itself in the first month, but if you don't feel like you could make that back in the relationships that you're going to form, being surrounded by hundreds of people that have that capital,
right,
then you probably shouldn't do it. Or if it's going to be cutting it too thin, then wait till you're there. Maybe that's the right room. It's just not the right room yet for you.
Yeah. Maybe you got to go to the first room first, right? You've got to get to the first room and say, cool, I'm comfortable here. That room may be two rooms away, right? And you say, okay, to your point, maybe I'll save up money and then I'll invest it in a year or so, or whatever that looks like. I'm assuming you've met Tony and just curious about how the coaching thing works with him and just in general environment. When we talked the first time, you mentioned, I think you were at like his business live, or I can't remember the names of his.
Probably Business Mastery.
That's what it is.
Yeah. I don't want to oversell my relationship with Tony. There's a lot of us out there, but yeah, I've definitely met him and got to be in smaller rooms with him where he's talking with us and stuff. But it's not like he would like walk in and Ken, my brother, or anything like that. But yeah, that whole world for me, like I said, I went in through self-preservation, self-discovery type reasons. And then I'm a leader by nature. So it's like all of a sudden you're in there and you're drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak. And it's like, well, how can I help others? And also selfishly, how do I stay part of the environment without paying for events over and over again, right? Like, so it's a good trade-off. And they have a leadership program that people can go through, and you actually pay to go through that. But once you're through it, then you can volunteer at events. And then through that process, you get promoted up. So like Rock and I are both trainers.
Tony.
Meaning when you see, like, for anyone that's seen like his documentary on Netflix, I'm Not Your Guru.
Yeah, great documentary.
People, yeah. And when you see the people broken into their teams and you see a person leading those teams, that's us. We're trainers. Yeah.
Interesting. I'm curious to get your thoughts on, I've gone to a number of courses, weekend things, masterminds, and you always get jazzed up during the event, right? And then you're like, oh, there's like 10 things that I want to do. Like, I want to start looking at Airbnbs for the real estate thing, or I want to start a business and I'm going to start looking at, how do you go from the euphoria of walking out of that room on a Sunday to then waking up Monday morning and then you have to go back to a W-2 job, or you've got to go back to a business that you have, or the normal life? How do you sustain that? Because I've gone that roller coaster of like, I'm super pumped. I know what I want to do. I walk out, I've got 4, 5, 10 things, whatever it is. But then I wake up 3 months later and I've done none of them because life happens, routines happen. I'm just really curious for myself, but also I'm sure listeners will get some value out of like, how do you sustain that, or at least sustain it for maybe a little bit longer than the next morning?
I love this question. This is a great question. To me, this is like the magic question, because a lot of us have like great ideas and then we look back and we go, oh, I thought of that already. Like, it's like, yeah, but I didn't do it.
Right.
And then again, going back to stories, then your brain starts telling you like, yeah, well, you always say you're going to do stuff, but you don't do it, right? Like, that's the kind of stuff we tell ourselves, which only reinforces that you're not going to do it again, right? So Here's what I would say. First of all, if you have any of that baggage around, like, I've said I was going to do it before. I said I was going to work out before. I said I was going to do whatever. Let it go. It's in the past. It's not serving you. And it's not helping you to serve the world. And what I would say is, let's use the seminar example. I started maybe 10 years ago, tacking on extra time, sort of like me time, to the end of a seminar whenever possible. So the seminar ends on a Sunday. Don't fly home till like Monday.
Okay.
Let yourself decompress and take all of those notes and be really kind to yourself, because you're not going to do everything on there. And it would be stupid to even try. What we end up doing, I think, with our seminars, the same thing we do in life. Using the gym example, you take someone that's never worked out and finally they get leverage on themselves, they get motivated, whatever it is, and they're like, I'm going to the gym. This is it, Justin. Today's the day. And they go run like 7 miles and they're like never ready for it. Now they're wrecked. And now they hate the gym even more than they did before.
They're sore. They wake up. They're tired. Yeah.
And their brain's going, I told you, dummy, this is bullshit. It always has been. It always will be. You're not a runner. What are you doing?
Yep.
You're not made for this. So you got to look at it realistically and go, okay, of all the stuff I wrote down right now, like, first of all, what's the stuff I can do easily that's going to make a great impact, like, right away? So the easy and big impact, that stuff's easy. The rest of it, decide when it needs to happen and just sort of plot it out in the future. So I always love coming away from something, but you need the time to decompress. That's the problem too, is like, you'll have the momentum and then you go, I'm definitely doing this, but I got to get to work tomorrow and I got to get some sleep tonight, but I'm definitely doing it tomorrow or at some point. And then work gets busy and then you're on. Literally by the next weekend, you've lost half your momentum already.
Right.
And then your kid's got a soccer game. And it's like, you know, after a while, you're like, what happened to that really good info? So again, small size bites that you can execute on right away and that you schedule. You don't leave it to like, I'm definitely going to do that.
Yep.
Like if someone said to me like, this is really important to me, I'm definitely going to do it. I'm like, it's not that important if you didn't schedule it. So schedule it. If it's like a 3-hour task and you're like, I don't have 3 hours. I'm like, do you have 15 minutes? Well, yeah, I could squeeze in 15 minutes. Good. Do 15 minutes for 12 days in a row.
Right.
That's 3 hours. Just do it.
Yeah, I definitely ebb and flow on my discipline on scheduling tasks, right? And I guess I'm a good executor. If I have a goal or if I know, okay, I need to recruit on this position or analyze this deal, I'll do it. But if it's like something that I need to like put some thought in, some strategy, like I like brainstorming, but I also don't do it in a focused way, right? So like there's times where like on my calendar, I'll put like just think time, right? Just think about what's the goal of the next 30, 60, 90 days or day or whatever it is. And then sometimes they fall off my calendar, right? And so I kind of like, I sprint and then I fall back to the mean and I sprint and then I fall back to the mean. So it's just that sustainability that I struggle with personally, but it's just, again, it's one of those things where you regress sometimes back, but I feel like I'm taking 2 steps forward, 1 step back, 2 steps forward. So I'm always like growing, but I guess I'm not where I should be or think I should be. And so sometimes that's why I asked about the question around the sustainability.
I think you got to be forgiving too, because you're definitely a guy that's aware of your actions, even when they're not in alignment with what you want them to be. You're at least going like, hey, sometimes I do this and this is not a great habit. That's okay. I mean, sometimes I eat too much ice cream. You know what I'm saying? Like,
just, right.
I mean, we're not perfect. So I think a big part of it is like, all right, hey, this could have gone better. Where do I need to give myself flexibility? And then where do I need to be a little more rigid? And I think for most people on here, especially people trying to be good at investing and people trying to quit their 9-to-5, if that's what they're trying to do, being self-employed is not for everybody. And it requires a significant amount of discipline. And the whole laptop lifestyle is something you earn, not something you're handed just because you quit getting your W-2.
Yeah, it is definitely, I say I don't have a boss, but I do because I have bills and I've got a wife and I can't just sit on my butt and not do anything all day, because obviously that would not go over well at dinner and all that fun stuff. But yeah, it is definitely a trip to go from walking out of a building that you've gone to for a year or 10 years, whatever your story is, and to then waking up and being like, okay, I've got to motivate myself. I have to, in the recruiting world, you've got to go kill what you hunt, right? You've got to go get it. Get the business, fill the positions, and then get paid. And again, it's not for everybody. And it's not a 9-to-5. It can be a 24/7, right? If you let it. So it's just all about balance. If somebody wants to connect with you to learn, maybe they've got questions, right? About, hey, I thought about Tony Robbins, or I thought about a mastermind, and maybe they want to just pick your brain. If you're open to that, obviously, what's the best way for somebody to just connect with you directly? And obviously, we'll put some stuff in the show notes, but if there's a way,
Because of the recruiting business, I sort of live on LinkedIn and I check everything else sporadically, but like either me or somebody that works for me is in my LinkedIn like every single day. So that's the best place. Just reach out to me there. Happy to answer any questions. Not selling anything. Like there's no course for me to, you're going to sign up for anything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have a question around personal development, anything like that, feel free to drop me a line there. Happy to answer you.
Yeah. So I have a 3-pack of questions that I ask every guest. The 2 of them are real estate related, so I'm going to tweak them just slightly. So I guess the first question is, what's one piece of advice that you learned? Typically, I ask it about how you got started in your real estate journey, but maybe it's what's one of the best pieces of advice you've picked up in your like mastermind coaching sphere that you either regurgitate to people or you have as a mantra that you just talk about?
I was just thinking of one mantra or saying that pertained to the last thing that we were talking about. It was never leave the scene of a decision without taking action.
Mm.
I love that. And that's what happens when we let ourselves down at those seminars. It's like when I was in that chair, I decided that I was going to do X, Y, and Z, and then I didn't take action, right?
Wait, so, say that one more time. I want to jot it down.
Never leave the scene of a decision without taking action. An example of that would be if you're like, this is it. I've had it. Today's the day that I'm going to lose the excess weight. Well, right there, like while you're at the seminar, the next break, like go sign up for the gym.
Yeah.
Buy a pair of running shoes, like do something to put it in motion so that we don't get back. And like we were saying before, get complacent and get lazy and put too much distance. Because a lot of times, here's what happens, when, not to go off on a tangent, but when
no,
you're at those seminars, when you get fired up, here's why you get fired up. I mean, yeah, there's some pretty good speakers and everything, but you know what they're good at doing? They're good at connecting with the real you. Like we're all built for growth and contribution, and we're all built generally for more than what we're doing. There's always more to us. And they know how to speak to that side. So they're sort of talking to the real you. It's not that you just got jacked up and sold a bunch of crap. It's actually that they were talking to the real you, but then you let the day-to-day you,
yeah,
your story. You let your environment, you let the people around you and all of that take back over. The longer you get back home and you go back to the normal and you don't take action, the further you are from the real you. Good news is the real you is still in there. You just got to wake him up all the time, right? You just got to keep engaging and keep feeding him. And you do that by taking action on the things that are going to light up your soul, not just on the stuff that you think you have to do.
Yeah. Working out is part of my story, and I'm training for triathlons and all these stupid things that I signed up for. But every morning, my alarm goes off at 5 and the fat kid, he is like, just snooze, just sit there. It's warm, it's comfortable, blah, blah, blah. And then you've got to really get yourself going. Like some people are just super motivated in the morning and some people aren't. And even though I've been doing this for years, getting up in the morning and working out, it's still not like the simplest thing in the world. All right. What's your favorite business book that you're into right now?
I don't know if it's a business book. It's a mindset book.
Yeah, I was going to say, it could be mindset or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I read it 3 years ago and it's not a big secret, but I'm just like rereading it right now, which is David Goggins, just huge in like 2019 or 2020.
Yeah. Have you read his new one?
No. And the reason I was rereading Can't Hurt Me is because the publisher of that book is coming on my podcast. And so I wanted to get reoriented with it, but I haven't read his new book. Have you?
I got it on Audible and I've started to listen to it, but then I got sidetracked with a lot of other things. But Allison listened to it and said it's just as good, if not better, than Can't Hurt Me. And so, yeah, David Goggins, if I'm going for a really long run, I'll tend to listen to his books because it just makes you motivated like nobody's business. So this will be an interesting question. And again, most of the people that are on here are deep into real estate. But if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life off of passive income. So let's say you have businesses that you own or real estate or whatever, what would you do and why?
This is going to sound like maybe a little bit like bullshit, but I guess I'm probably already made close to that number already or maybe over it. But yeah, nothing for me would change versus what I'm doing right now. Like everything that I don't want to do, I find ways to delegate it already. I don't believe in retirement. I do not like that word at all. I do believe in financial freedom. I do believe in getting to make choices about where I have to be or don't have to be. And so I believe in freedom a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't believe in crossing some imaginary finish line. I think there's just too many examples in our society. And I'm looking at my father and my wife's father and those generations, you know, the baby boomers, where I'm like, that was not a great way to live. Like work your ass off for 45, 50 years and then sort of die. Like you're just going to fade off into the sunset. And there's other new ways of thinking when you're getting around people like we have in these masterminds, and you're going, well, wait a minute, I've ran marathons with 85-year-olds. I'm around guys like Peter Diamantis, who's saying that people on this planet right now, there's people that are going to live to 150. And I'm sort of going like, well, if someone's going to do that, maybe I'll be one of those people instead. And so, and I don't think that happens by cashing in your chips at 65. Like, that doesn't even make sense. At some point, 65 is going to be middle age. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Well, I mean, they're constantly raising the retirement age, right? And Social Security, who the hell knows if it's going to be there when we're old and retired, if you will. And so I definitely am more of the mindset of, to your point, once I get to that number, it's like, I'm only going to do the things that I want to do, right? And that may be running more marathons, running ultra marathons, doing triathlons, and maybe starting another business, right? But it's something that I choose to do, not have to do.
Right.
And yeah, again, it's that mindset shift that I and Allison and I went through. It's just like, sometimes when I see people, and I'm like, I just want to shake them a little bit, like, hey, there's different ways to think about. Everybody's got to go down their own journey, and they may read Rich Dad Poor Dad and they don't get the light bulb, and other people read other books and the light bulb goes off, right? So it's a different stroke for folks.
There's also something about, like, look, running a business and providing jobs and being a leader and all of these things that make your life fulfilled. Now, if it starts becoming like that makes your life a grind because, you know, you're working 12 hours a day, that's a different story. But if it's like, look, you get to pick your spots, you've got your company to this point, and those things still fill you up, then to me, by all means, do it. And if you're in a business that's not, sell it and find one that does.
But that's right.
I don't see myself ever sitting on the couch doing nothing. Like, that's not in the cards for me.
Yeah. No, this has been awesome, Ken. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. And obviously, as we mentioned, check him out on LinkedIn. I know he's always putting content out on there. So if you have any questions about coaching or masterminds or anything like that, definitely reach out to him on LinkedIn. So, man, Ken, thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thanks, brother. So good to see you again. It's been a while. Man.
Awesome. I hope everybody took something away from this episode. I've got another one dropping soon, so keep listening. See ya.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.